Welcome to Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights, a podcast by coaches for coaches. Our guests share their hard-won wisdom to help you grow your coaching business and create a life of success. So get ready to unlock the blueprints to your success.
Welcome everyone to today's episode. I'm thrilled to have you here and I'm excited to have Julie Sung. Her company is Julie Sung Certified Coaching Services and I'm excited to learn more about what she does. So welcome to the show, Julie. It's lovely to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
So tell us a little bit about how you came upon becoming a coach, how you started your business, you know, kind of what was your journey? What was your background?
Yes, it was quite the journey and just one long detour to, I think, where I'm supposed to land, which is on coaching. But I spent over 25 years being a corporate maven, a ladder climber, gold star chaser, and I was working in high tech for most of that time. So it was a very competitive, fast-paced, aggressive environment. And I surprisingly did well in it. I kept booming up, 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 up. And the whole time I was getting a little bit further and further away from my true nature and how I like to operate my real authentic self. But I didn't really realize it because I kept getting these external gratifications of, you know, pat on the back, rewards, promotions. And I thought that was fulfilling. So my whole career, I thought, this is it. I am a badge employee person. I'm always going to be a W-2. And this is, you know, this is my path. And one day I was sitting in my highest leadership position. The pandemic had just started and everything was kind of going haywire. And companies were really panicked, including my company, and my boss ended up leaving. I was very much a right-hand man kind of role to my boss. So when that happened, the entire company was downsizing and my role was being eliminated along with, you know, most of my department at that time. And you'd think that that was the perfect opportunity to regroup and say, hey, what do I really want? And maybe I want to take on a different path. And I did not do that. The only thing I did was say, okay, well, I'm going to venture out on my own and just jump into consulting because just practically no one was hiring at that time. Everyone was just in an upheaval. No one was sure what was happening in the world. So I thankfully had built a strong enough network where I can slide into consulting. And what I didn't realize at the time was it was just a new hamster wheel. I was just doing the same thing and putting forth the same behaviors out there for the same outcome, which was slowly but surely going to burn out. I was making more money. I thought this was what entrepreneurship and independence was, but it really wasn't. I was more stressed than ever. I was constantly in this frazzled state. And that's when I was almost forced to stop and say, okay, what am I doing here? The whole world is on fire. And I feel so unfulfilled, even though I'm getting these great projects with these great companies and, you know, making a good living, but is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? Because every morning I was getting up and had a little bit of that dread of, I don't know if I want to go to work today. And I really hadn't had that before for many years. So then as I was consulting, I started doing a little bit more intentional consulting, meaning more coaching for my clients than just, hey, I'm going to execute on this project for you. And listening more and putting forth more my own ideas, which if you're a pure consultant, you don't really do. You know, you take the batch of work, you take the scope, and you just kind of run with it. But I started to really shift more into coaching and found that I found that much more motivating and fulfilling and exciting and scary and uncomfortable. And I had that big imposter syndrome of, am I supposed to be doing this? Am I even qualified to give anyone advice? I don't know. But I just kept doing it. I got good responses. And then I started to wean myself off of pure consulting and going more into coaching and then ultimately shifting my business model to do more coaching. And now I work with organizations, and I'm starting to go much more into nonprofit organizations and working with them than for-profit, although I do work with both. And they hire me to coach their mid-level management to upper-level management, primarily. Sometimes they'll hire me to do staff coaching, meaning the more junior level people around, you know, hey, how do you professionally perform in the workplace and things. But for the most part, I'm coaching kind of the management layer who have to manage up and down. They're dealing with a new generation of workers and a generation above them, their leaders who are still very much stuck in a different mindset of show up early, stay late, be more visible. You know, that's proves your dedication and, you know, your drive. And the younger generation that they're pulling up, who are working for them, are like, it's 5 minutes into my lunch hour and now you've crossed boundaries. And so it's a very tough place to be. So that's been the bulk of my coaching. And out of that, I recently came out with my first book, which is more geared towards early stage professionals who really can't afford to have a coach, but need a lot of good advice. So I, you know, put out a book for them. And so my coaching business is continuing to evolve. Me, myself, what it means to be a coach as an entrepreneur, leading my own business, that continues to grow and evolve as well. And it's been such an interesting and fulfilling detour of a journey. But yeah, it's been scary and fun and great and really inspiring to work with all the people that I do.
That's fantastic. Yeah, you kind of really went from technology to nonprofits. You kind of hit both ends of the scale, didn't you?
That's right, I did. And I'm so lucky because a lot of the skills I learned in the high tech world and the corporate world certainly translate over. And what I'm finding is people who work in nonprofit, a lot of times they just don't get the investment to do the kind of professional skills coaching that they need. But they still need it because even though it's a nonprofit organization, it is still a professional atmosphere. But a lot of times, you know, nonprofits just don't have the cushion of being able to hire outside coaches, especially for, you know, mid-management. A lot of leaders do. They still do executive coaching, but not really at the mid to upper management level, and certainly not at the, you know, staff level.
Yeah. So I would imagine nonprofits is kind of a different world. You know, it's not quite corporate, but it's not, you know, casual, if you will, either. And
Right.
yeah, but I would imagine also they're very passionate about what they do.
Yes. And that's a trap that, ironically, they fall into where they feel like, oh, I love my work. I'm passionate and dedicated. So I'll just work harder. And you and I both know you can't outwork problems. And so a lot of my coaching revolves around that. It's around, hey, I know you're passionate. I know you're dedicated. You don't have to prove it by working 15 hours a day. There are other methods and tools and techniques you can use to better balance that out and also delegate and, you know, mentor and manage so you don't have to be working all those hours yourself. And that's tough because nonprofit in particular, I find this in the private sector as well. You're rewarded for your job and doing it well, so you keep doing it, and you're this hands-on person, and you're now in the cycle where you just can't ever, you know, get out of it and pull yourself up to the more strategic level. So.
Yeah. Well, it's so smart of them to hire a coach because I don't know if a lot of them will get there, you know, if they don't have somebody outside saying, hang on a minute, you know, have you thought about doing it this way? Or, you know, have you tried this? Or what I see is, you know, so it's great
That's
that
absolutely right.
it's great there are people out there like you helping them. I love that.
Thank you.
So you told me you have a book, but you didn't tell me what the book was.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes. So the book is called Thrive and Shine. It's a practical handbook for early stage professionals. And when I first conceived the book, It was the working title in my head was Do As I Say, Not As I Did, because it was so much of my own mistakes over the years of the 25, nearly 30 years working in the corporate world as a woman, as someone who sometimes had mentorship, sometimes didn't, sometimes had great managers, sometimes didn't, in this highly fast-moving, competitive, sometimes cutthroat environment. And I thought, what are the things I would want to know if I were starting out all over again? So that's kind of where it started from. I never saw myself as a coach, and I doubly never saw myself as a writer, ever putting out a book out there. But life takes you in funny directions, and you just trust your gut and you put something out there, and it's thankfully been really well received. It hit number one across my categories on Amazon right from publication. So I've been very fortunate, but I'm most of all really happy my message is getting out there and helping people.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you for doing that for those who need it.
Thank you.
So let's see, you work with nonprofits. Is that exclusively, or is that just kind of the direction you ended up going?
Yeah, it's definitely not exclusively. It's the direction I ended up going because as I was entering into more and more more coaching and establishing that as my true business model, moving away from consulting. Consulting was almost entirely private sector, public and private companies. But as I was going more into coaching, it was really to come from a place of service and what that service mindset. And so I initially started offering my coaching services for very, very low cost to nonprofits. Number one, just on a practical level, to get the hours and get the experience and not have to deal with pounding down the door of HR at some big corporation and doing all that. And I thought, no, I need to get some experience and I need to, get my sea legs underneath me. And going to nonprofits and charging them almost nothing was a great way to do that. And I should say, as a side note, the reason why I didn't volunteer or give away my services was because I thought it was important for me starting out as a coach, if I'm really building a business around it, to treat it as a job. So even if they were paying me $10 an hour, just to have some value attached to it, I thought more for me than for them, it would be important to have some kind of value so I can psychologically say, yes, I'm not just volunteering here, I am working. So that was really important. And so that's how I really started to get my coaching business off the ground. The more I did that and started diving more into the world of nonprofits, the more I realized there's a need. And I thought, well, if the whole point is me helping people, this is where they need it. I mean, company ABC can hire any coach that they really want. They have the budget for it. And when private companies hire me, I'm always thankful and I'm grateful to work with them because, of course, that's a world I know very, very well. But there's a real gratification in working for nonprofits and with these folks who never expected to get something like a one-on-one executive coach, So it's been great. It's been really a thrill.
That's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about, you don't have to give us any names or anything. Tell us a little bit about maybe some clients. Maybe they were favorites. Maybe they were just ones that, took it and ran with it and did amazing things, kind of their transformation.
Yes, this one client in particular who I'm still working with, they're in the business of providing health and community services to underprivileged neighborhoods and communities. And they're dealing with a very upside down organizational structure in the sense that heavy experience, very talented leadership that's a small, tiny little leadership team on the top. And a ton of junior staff, first job out of college. A lot of them, they've never had role models, even working in white collar office environments. A lot of times they're the first people in their families to go to college. So they get there with all the passion and enthusiasm and talent with no tools whatsoever. Because as you and I know, it's not like college teaches you how to be a professional employee, right? So you're dealing with a leadership team that's overstretched, that does not have the bandwidth to really bring up the junior staff. And then junior staff who are doing a lot of the execution work, but they're running into all the pitfalls that you and I did when we were 21, 22 of how do I work with this person? You know, the office politics and the I don't know how to deal with this and I don't know how to do it. Maybe I fake it. And, you know, so all of that. So they brought me in, and now they're really thriving after that first project. I was brought in to work with just their one, you know, kind of top level manager who was dealing with a staff of like 20 people and just did not know what to do because she was a new manager herself. And now my engagement with them has grown where I'm doing staff training. I'm coaching them across the management layers. They've been able to grow as an organization. And it's also freed up leadership where they can work on more strategic things versus putting out these little fires of, oh no, you know, there was a typo in this grant and I don't know how to tell them that they made a mistake, you know, like all these little everyday things. So it's been really gratifying to see how I could actively contribute to the organization's growth as it freed up everyone's bandwidth to go to the next level of performance.
Yeah, that's great. 'Cause I would think that like your first, maybe not you, but someone's first inclination might be, oh, we need to educate, you know, the people at the, you know, who are actually doing the implementation. But then you have to think about the guidance of the organization starts at the top. And if you can get
That's
that
right.
person to understand and like you said, take some of the responsibility off them and get them to thrive, then it trickles down, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And a couple of the managers, especially because they had never been in any kind of coaching situation before, they thought they were getting coaching because they were in trouble. Like they did something wrong. So this was like corrective action somehow. And I was like, no. You wouldn't get a coach unless the organization wanted to invest in you because it's real time, money, and energy. It's an investment in you. And it was really interesting where they would step into it with a lot of fear and defensiveness and, you know, and treat it like, oh no, this is like an HR performance plan kind of exercise. And I was like, no. It's not. You and I are here because you're actually doing great, you know.
Yeah, we just need you to have some more strategies to implement.
That's
So
right.
that's great.
That's
So do
right.
you work mostly one-on-one with people or do you work with them as a group?
Yeah, both actually. So, some organizations hire me specifically to do one-on-one coaching for a group of people, like you know, usually it's, hey, I have these 3 to 5 managers at this one layer, and I, you know, they're high potential managers, but I need them to get more structure, more tools, better at whatever it is, time management, performance management, something. Or they'll hire me to work with a team of people and just workshop them through a curriculum. So I'm seeing that a lot more with organizations who are dealing with the Gen Z workers. And it's interesting because, you know, we over the years have heard, oh, millennials, right? Oh, the millennial workers. The millennials are in management. Like they are my clients, you know? So I was talking to an old boss of mine the other day, and he was like, I was high on these millennials, and I don't know. It's just so different. They don't get it. I was like, millennials are not, you're talking about Gen Z. Like you're ignoring the generation that you're actually talking about. So a lot of organizations will hire me because of that workforce generational gap and say, I don't know how to talk to these people. I just made my employee cry the other day, true story, and I don't even know what I said, you know. So there's a lot of coaching the leaders in terms of how to work with this generation and have them understand that they don't need to be talked at. They do need to be respected because they're very bright and talented. But how do you manage them to pull out productivity? And then working with the younger generation of workers who, you know, have all the right intentions, but don't know how to function in a true professional environment where there are expectations like deadlines and deliverables. And, you know, it's not school anymore. You can't just get a pass. Like, you know, there are consequences at play. So, a lot of times when I do workshops around groups of people, it's around that topic, which seems to be a very dominant issue right now across all types of organizations.
Yeah, it's funny because I have kids in college, but I feel like it's interesting, and it has to do with the advent of technology and cell phones and things that they're not as socially experienced, because a lot of their communication is just typing. And it's not like person to person, they're so it's different. And then with throwing COVID in there, in some of their formative years, it's just really different. It's unexpected, I guess.
Yeah, it is. One client that I've been working with, he's working a software company, but his clientele are all in manufacturing. And manufacturing right now, especially industrial manufacturing, it's a fascinating field because a lot of young people are actually joining it. You know, we think about manufacturing as the stalwart, kind of old, stodgy industry. And for the most part, there are a lot of those out there, kind of at the leadership level. Like I've worked here 30 years, I've been here 35 years, type of thing, especially on the ground, like in factory settings or, on the front lines. But a lot of these younger workers are coming in, and I hear stories from these managers like, I'm standing right there, and he texted me the answer to my question. But I'm literally 30 feet away. Why can't he just come talk to me? And it's just that kind of thing where, yeah, I think we all fall back to our comfort zone. So if you think about this generation where they've never been alive in a world without the internet ever, they're now kind of blossoming and coming into true adulthood in the age of AI. And for me, I'm in my 50s. I have no idea what that would be like to, come out to the world and there's nothing but technology around you and that connects you and that's how you connect with other people. And I think, again, we all just kind of have that gravitational pull back to our comfort zones. I think for our generation, our Gen X, it's all about let's meet, let's talk out our problems, let's work it out, let's hash it out and pound it out. And then for these folks, they're like, oh, why? I can just ChatGPT it and like that's so easy. Isn't that easier?
AI will tell me everything I need to know.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I actually think sometimes, like, if my parents were still around, they would just be, it would be so over their head. Like, it's so inconceivable that, 5 years ago, even that we would have AI and all of its capabilities and how fast it's evolving as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, my coaching advice to folks who are dealing with, trying to manage that generation is, you have to embrace where they are and meet them where they are to the best you can. And one example I use, which is not at all work related, but there are some family members, not on my side because my mother is so afraid of technology, like she can't send a text message, but on my partner's side, his mother is 90. She is on social media every day and lives on text. And his uncle, who recently passed away, but he was at 94. And he was all about AI and LLMs and, just doing all these things. So, I think age or that generation that we kind of put ourselves into that box, like, oh, well, I did it this way. This is, I think we need to sometimes look at these examples of folks who, for them, age is truly just a number. The years of experience is truly just what they have under their belt, but it doesn't define or limit who they are. And they just open up and, hey, my family's on Facebook, my kids, my grandkids are on Facebook, so I'm going there and I'm on Instagram and, this is what my family's doing, so I'm going to meet them where they are. And I think from a work setting, it would be great if we had folks who are like, okay, if this is where my staff is, I need to dive in and meet them where they are and see how I can bridge that gap a little bit more.
Yeah, that's funny. When you started talking about that, embrace was the word I thought of as well. Yeah, because some people would say, oh, texting people, how rude, like when you're sitting with someone. But if that's the way they've always done it and that's their way of communication, then yeah, you gotta embrace it and I guess mold it into something that makes more sense for the environment. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, by embracing it, I don't mean just flat out condone it and just let them be, but you have to embrace it in the sense of acknowledge that this is the reality that you're dealing with, that they're bringing to you, and then, gently coach and manage and mentor them, to some place that is more acceptable as a middle ground. But just saying all or nothing on either side is just not going to be conducive.
That sounds good. Well, Julie, this has been fantastic and fascinating, and I love hearing your rich background, and I love the fact that you're helping people who really, really need it, and
Thank you.
helping them communicate better with everyone up and down. So, thank you for doing that.
Oh, thank you.
And so I wanted to ask people who are listening who are saying, "Oh my gosh, my organization needs Julie's help." What is the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yes, easiest way is go to my website, which is Julie Sung. It's JuleeSung.com. And all of my contact info is there. You can reach out directly. I have a lot of social media channels with free videos and free content out there too, if people want to get a little snippet of my teachings and how I approach the work.
Love that. Okay. So, last question. If you could provide one tip to make the world a better place, what would that be?
I would say just take a breath and remember to protect your energy and put yourself first. A lot of times, when I'm dealing with clients, especially as a coach, and coaches fall into this worse ourselves. I mean, we're the worst culprits of this. We give, 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 give. We pour out our energy to someone, to something else. It could be your job, it could be your family, it could be your staff, it could be your career, anything like that. And you can't pour from an empty cup. So, as long as you have some grace and generosity for your own self and protect your own energy, then you can truly help others around you. So, my advice is protect yourself, love yourself, give yourself the energy first, come from a point of positivity, and you'll absolutely make the world around you a better place.
Oh, love that. That's a great note to end on. Well, Julie, this has been a delight. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Jeannie, thank you. It's been my privilege. I've loved speaking with you, and I am a big fan of the show. I learned so much from the episodes, so I'm really looking forward to hearing this one and then all the ones to follow.
Thanks for joining us today on Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights. We hope you're leaving this episode with inspiration to take your coaching business and your life to the next level. If you found value in this episode, we would love it if you would subscribe and share it with someone else who you think might benefit from hearing it. Thanks, and we'll see you in the next episode.